Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca Road, when along came a semi with a high-end canvas-covered load. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, with me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the deserts bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Mattawa, La Paloma, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Barranquilla, and Padilla. I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Texas, County, Monterey, Faraday, Santa Fe, Tallapoosa, Glen Rock, Black Rock, Little Rock, Oskaloosa, Tennessee, Chicopee, Spirit Lake, Grand Lake, Devil's Lake, Crater Lake, the Beach Lake. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Across the desert, bare, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Of travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Louisville, Nashville, Knoxville, Ombabaka, Shepherdville, Jacksonville, Waterville, Coastal Rifle, Pittsfield, Springfield, Bakersfield, Sarif, Port Hackensack, Cadillac, Fond du Lac, Davenport, Idaho, Jellicoe, Argentina, Diamantina, Pasadena, Catalina, Sea, Guatemala. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumble Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumble Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumble Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you very much, Miss Audrey England. Of course, we could not do the show without you. We can't get Johnny Cash. Oh, he just stopped. We usually stop at Dayton on a trip across the country or around the country, but tonight it wouldn't shut off, but it finally did. I was afraid that, Audrey, you were going to be interrupted with Johnny Cash. Had you ever sang a duet with him? That would be good. I know you're a very good singer, so that could. But you don't do country, do you? Well, you could, yeah. Who knows? You could be the next star at Nashville. Anyway, thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us in the Jumble Justice Radio Show. Tonight we're going to do something pretty relevant. We're going to listen to three people, two at least, who are very well informed and authors on the subject of voter fraud. Oh, you say that can't not in the United States. Well, John Fund is one of those, and he wrote a book called Stealing Elections. But tonight we'll be listening to John Fund and Hans von Spakovsky speak about their book, Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Vote at Risk. You've already been hearing. The show is actually going to be hosted by the discussion by Linda Killian. She's from the Wilson Center. And we'll have to see what goes on in this discussion, but I think you'll enjoy it. And you're already hearing about, I think, Maryland, some other places, voter fraud, early voting. You're hearing about Chicago. I mentioned that last week, where you vote Republican and it shows up Democrats. I'm sure that's just an accident, right? Is that right, Mike? Just a little mishap. Anyway, we want to thank Mike Sorrento and Lucy Spears for being here with us tonight and helping with a lot of the technical problems. And Mike finally got Johnny Cash shut off. Not that we don't want to hear his whole song, but it's a long one. If you hear me gag, strangle, cough a little bit tonight, I'm still working with that cold. And I'm not the only person around this little town of Tiffin, Ohio, that has one, but anyway, we'll get, I have nothing, no symptoms except a little congestion, and take a pill every once in a while, a cough drop that helps with that. But this show, we look at police, courts, corrections, juvenile justice issues, and we take a look at their professionals and see what they're doing. And of course, voter fraud and illegal voting is one of those things that federal and state agents have jurisdiction over in one or more ways. But it's coming up. It's a big election, and everybody says, "Well, I'm tired of hearing about it." And I understand what you're saying, but we should never get tired of democracy and its process. Think of what it would be if we didn't have this and we weren't allowed to intervene and get our opinion out and get the thing straightened out and have a truthful process with the integrity we need to elect the people who deserve that. But anyway, you're listening on Blog Talk Radio. You've heard about that before. And Ellen Levy is the CEO of BTR and the genius behind the medium. So if you want to get your own show, any person, interest group, organization can have their own show. In fact, I just saw Tavis Smiley on Fox News tonight, earlier this evening. He was on the Bill O'Reilly Show, and he has a Blog Talk Radio show, and a very popular columnist, commentator, etc. But anyway, these shows, by the way, they're archived. All you had to do is go to blogtalkradio.org and get signed up, and literally, I'm not kidding, less than a half hour, you could be broadcasting your own show worldwide and streaming audio to an unlimited number of listeners. Can I say wow? Am I allowed to say that's one of my forbidden? I'm going to say wow. That is really something. These shows are immediately archived, and you can play them back. And many of the people that listen to our show don't listen live. They pick the thing up on a podcast and listen to it that way, and it's on the Blog Talk Radio site. Okay, I think we're getting ready to go. Let's do a blonde joke. Did we do blonde jokes on this show? I think we do. So here's a... Here's a blonde joke that I thought you might enjoy tonight. I mean, it's an interesting blonde joke. And, in fact, I've got two of them written down here. These are short ones, not long ones, so I did two. What do you call a blonde with half a brain? Does anyone know the answer to that? What do you call a blonde with half a brain? The answer is gifted. Okay, gifted. How about this one? Blonde's driving down the street with her friend in her car, and the blonde looks up at a sign and points to it while she's driving and starts laughing, and they're driving by the YMCA, and she says to her friend, "They couldn't even spell Macy's." They couldn't spell Macy's. Here's a little site that I found browsing around on the internet on some political type sites. Keep in mind our show is kind of politically based, I suppose you could say that. But it's called GunsSaveLives.net, guns, plural, SaveLives.net. And what you get is a map of the entire United States with that little bubble or teardrop thing that you click on for locations, and when you click on that location, it gives you a paragraph or two summary of instances all over the United States, depending where you click. You can go to Ohio, California, whatever, and it gives you a summary of how someone used a gun or a firearm to ward off or to actually kill a felon that was attacking them. But isn't that something? It shows you can kind of gather that. I might do a little article about that, actually, by looking at 50 or 60 of them across the country and sort of get a representative sample from that. But it's GunsSaveLives.net. I don't know why I wanted to comment on this, but I watched the baseball game, and by the way, does anybody go to baseball games or football games on a regular basis? I don't do that anymore. But, back in the Ice Age when I went to college, I went to Michigan State game and Cincinnati games and things like that. But what is it with these towels that everybody's twirling around? I'm trying to figure out. I'm sitting behind somebody or even two rows behind somebody, and they're either standing up or sitting down and whirling that towel around. It's not a full-size towel, but it's big enough. I mean, are they whapping people in the face once in a while? I mean, wouldn't you get tired of somebody spinning that thing around? It's a rule that they can only do it, you know, when they're not pitching or, you know, whatever's going on. But wouldn't it get on your nerves? Here's another one that bugs me, and I've talked to quite a few people about this. Have you seen the DirecTV ads? DirecTV sponsors a lot of the, in fact, it's a World Series. And to get your DirecTV, they have an advertisement that shows three guys standing at a urinal, and then it focuses in on two and then on one, standing at a urinal doing what you do there. I mean, how far have we come or been reduced to? What in the world? Do we need that to sell DirecTV? I mean, what's next? Well, I won't even venture a guess in public about what would be next. But isn't that incredible? I mean, we're actually showing people standing at a urinal. I'm thinking about what a little kid, I'm 9, I'm 10, I'm looking at them, what? And what are the parents telling their children with something like that? I don't get it. Okay, by the way, concerning guns, did you know that the Ohio Coalition Against Firearms would actually like you to listen to their public service announcement and then go down and turn in your gun?
Carrying concealed handguns in Ohio? It's a deadly idea. A message from the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Okay, thank you very much, Ohio Coalition. Okay, sorry for that little time. Here's a green tip. I actually followed this one myself today. The green tip is number 858 from Esma Floyd's little book, 1001 Ways to Save the Planet. And the green tip is, number 858, is go get your car serviced. Because when your car is serviced and it runs better, it makes for a cleaner planet. It does. It makes for a cleaner planet. Can you actually believe that? Yeah, you can believe that. Of course you're going to approve of it. So let's get things in order. Mike put on that government control marching app that you hear people marching like a totalitarian regime, and I won't mention the one that it probably came from. But anyway, that's the green tip to get your car serviced. And I love to go to service because, you know, they want to replace your motor, your engine, your body, your back doors. I won't mention what kind of car I have. But anyway, let's take a listen to some of the news going on. And I'm going to kind of stay away from Ebola tonight. You know, the big story, I guess, today about Ebola is what? That the woman nurse who spent her time in Africa, Western Africa, she's now taking bike rides with her boyfriend when I guess the governor and several governors wanted her quarantined and other people. And she's all around with these reporters, and reporters are following her in cars and bikes and walking up and shaking hands with her and all that. And the other doctor, remember, he went into quarantine when he came, and they wanted her to stay 21 days, which she says she doesn't have any symptoms. And, you know, there's a big debate about that. I think more people are for her staying put away for about 21 days and then coming out. But I think she kind of enjoys she looks like she enjoys the publicity very, very much. But anyway, you know, after the World Series game was over, that was the San Francisco Giants and the Kansas City Royals, right? There was a celebration in San Francisco because they won, I guess, like 3 out of the last 5 World Series. It's the only baseball games I ever watch, really. But San Francisco's World Series celebrations were marred a little bit because why? They had shootings and arrests as crowds of revelers took to the streets and they cheered Wednesday's win over the Kansas Royals. One person walked into a hospital for treatment from a gunshot wound in the Mission District of San Francisco. I think I know where that is. Then another had been shot a short time earlier in the same spot at the city. But is it possible now in America to have great events and great outcomes that make us all joyous and, can I say, happy? That's another one of my restricted words, without going absolutely crazy? I mean, absolutely crazy. Why? All right, let's shift over to stupid criminals. This was a funny one. Albuquerque, New Mexico. I like that place. I ran an uphill race over there once. It's a 10K race up the mountain, Sandia Mountain. But anyway, and my parents used to live there. But anyway, the police in Albuquerque, they're saying some man who was suspected of a $250,000 jewelry heist in a home, he should have flushed the evidence behind. What do they mean by that? Well, Ramon Herrera, he committed a burglary in September, and using DNA left on the toilet, they were able to identify him. He said he relieved himself while taking $250,000 worth of jewelry. So that usually means they're pretty smart burglars. They know what they're looking for. From a home while the owners were on vacation, but he didn't flush the toilet. Then he decided to take a Coke from the refrigerator. He drank it, and then he left the can along with his DNA. So anyway, the DNA from the can and the toilet was matched to Mr. Herrera. So he's pleaded not guilty to the charges. What's he going to say? He was in there cleaning the carpet? But that's absolutely incredible. Absolutely incredible. All right. I'm not even going to go into this. And this is one where a teacher in District of Columbia had sex with a 17-year-old student who had a mental or learning disability and all that. And she was a sub or a temporary teacher. I won't even go to sickening. I mean, gee, many charismas. What kind of people are getting these jobs? all right. Talk about thieves. I guess I'm focusing on dumb, stupid, sad types of crimes tonight. But this suburban teenager, 1 year ago, Sammy Luther, learned how to use his new prosthetic device. He was born without a left arm and a hand. He learned quickly to use this device that's worth $95,000. He said, it was very important to me, he says. And it helped me out with a lot of things, especially carrying around books. Hey, there's a guy that reads books. He's 16 years old. He's from North Aurora. And guess what happened? His mother parks in a parking lot somewhere in their neighborhood, and they were taking a course on acting and modeling lessons. She parked the car and forgot to lock it, and Sam left his artificial arm, his prosthesis, in the car. Guess what? Somebody took the prosthesis. So his $100,000 arm is now missing. And if you happen to see that, let the police know right away. But can you believe some creep would even take that? But the mother says, I can't believe people are going around parking lots shaking door handles to see if they're unlocked. Really? I think people have been doing that since we had automobiles that closed up all the way. But, just absolutely incredible. let me see how far we should go with this on the news. I want to go down to the drone terrorism. Yeah, let's finish up with drone terrorism, and then we'll get right to the fraudulent election things. And we're going to hear next Tuesday's election night, correct? Have you already voted? I hope just once if you vote early. A lot of people don't like to do that. They like sort of the ceremonial aspect of, you know, going to the voting booth and seeing friends they haven't seen since last year. But it's interesting. We have crimes in the parking lots of voting establishments also. Did you know that? Yeah. I can remember those back in the Ice Age when I was a cop, hearing about that kind of junk. But here's one. The New York Police Department is starting to worry that a possible new tool for these terrorists could be drones. They have this concern over drones. Can you believe that? And for the first time, a top New York City police official publicly acknowledges why there's growing concern. He just said that, the technology's there. And all you got to do is combine that technology with some type of gun or, I don't want to say the B word, type of device. You get on a watch list if you say something like that. We've seen video here where the drone was flying at different targets along the route and very accurately hitting the targets with paintballs. So people practicing this, police said, New York City police said the drones and their potential use by terrorists amounts to a wake-up call. I imagine it does. And until we get serious about this terrorism, again, where's Harry Truman when you need him? Wipe him off the face of the earth. We're going to have to worry about this kind of thing. So if you see something flying out there in your backyard or around your car or whatever, be careful because they're becoming more and more. You know, I experimented with that. I bought one off of the Brookstone website and played around with it a little bit. It would fly with my phone from the controls of my phone, that type of thing. But what I decided to do was give it to one of my friends, and he gave it to his son to play with. But it wouldn't go that far. It would only go out about 200 feet, 250 feet. But there's really sophisticated ones now, and I guess they're not that much money. Okay, give me some time to set this up, and what we're going to do is listen to John Fund, who is a journalist with the Wall Street Journal, and Hans von Spakovsky, and they have a new book out, or a book out called Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Their Vote at Risk. And I was going to just play John Fund's book, talk and let him talk about his book called Stealing Elections, but we're going to combine with these. Book TV, C-SPAN BookTV.org is having a little bit of trouble with loading here tonight. But anyway, give me time to get this set up, and away we'll go. And I think you will enjoy this.
It's working.
We're getting close.
Coming up next on Book TV, Afterwards, with guest host, Newsweek Daily Beast contributor, and author of The Swing Vote, Linda Killian. This week, John Fund and Hans von Spakovsky argue the need for voter identification and election monitors for U.S. elections in their latest book, Who's Counting? The program is about an hour.
Hi, I'm Linda Killian, and I'm joined here by John Fund and Hans von Spakovsky, authors of Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Vote at Risk. So let's start off right away. This is a chronicle of select cases of voter fraud and a ringing endorsement of stricter voter ID laws. You call the U.S. election system the world's sloppiest electoral system. Why did you write this book?
For a very simple reason. Hans and I both recognize that Florida 2000 was a disaster for this country. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, conservative or liberal, or just a concerned citizen, we had 47 days of uncertainty. We didn't know who the president was going to be. We had the courts dragged in into a decision that the voters should be issue resolved with, and it was a mess. It exposed our system as having two problems. This book is not just about voter fraud. It's about bureaucratic incompetence. And the danger in our system is that you can't always tell where the incompetence ends and the fraud potentially can begin. And the incompetence creates a breeding ground where fraud can grow very quickly. So I want to avoid a Florida 2000. You know, I quote Doug Chapin of the Pew Center there in the book. He says, we have the same conditions as applied in Florida 2000, a very close presidential election, a lot of contested states, the chance of having a close race that could go to the courts. But just like in a forest fire, you have underbrush, which can create conditions for catastrophe. We have a lot more underbrush now called lawyers. Each side is going to have 10,000 lawyers monitoring this election. What my fear is, if we don't address the bureaucratic bungling and the potential for voter fraud before the election, we could have five, six, or seven Floridas and a condition in which the courts really mess this up.
Coming up next on Book TV, Afterwards, with guest host, Newsweek Daily Beast contributor, and author.
Couldn't see it. Some people didn't vote in that election. It was a very close election. But remember, For those people who think that our election can be stolen by electronic voting machines, we've had experience with electronic voting machines of a previous generation called optical scan. This is where, you remember the tests in school, you fill in the oval with a pencil.
And they've malfunctioned. We've had incidents.
No, of course they have. Every technology is going to have problems. Paper ballots have problems because you can easily add extra paper ballots to a count. But we have never had, in 40 years, where we have used optical scan machines in millions and millions and millions of voting situations, we have never had a case where there's been a coordinated systemic effort to try to manipulate the results.
Yeah,
that is why I think that these are individual problems. What you want to avoid is in Venezuela. Hugo Chavez has every electronic voting machine report to a central counting location. That is where you can have real potential for stealing elections.
Right. But I think systemic fraud is different from malfunction. And I think there have been numerous cases of malfunction. Certainly, you know, people having machines breaking down, people not being able to vote, having to bring in new machines. And I would certainly argue that those instances are conceivably on a par with the number of voter fraud incidences that you talk about in your book.
But the polls still that's not wrong. I mean, you point out to me cases where that has happened. I don't know what you're talking about. With OptiScan equipment, the whole point of OptiScan equipment is that you've got an audit trail. If someone claims that there's some kind of problem with the software that's used to count the ballots, because the way those work is the paper ballot is scanned, the software total is the totals it up. If there's a problem, you've got the paper ballots as a backup. You can always count your paper ballot.
Not all
compare
states.
That to the software that's used to scan that.
Yes, but not all states use paper backup.
No, some states use electronic voting equipment, but that's mandated by federal law. It's Congress that told the states that in every state in the country, in every precinct, they've got to have at least one machine that can be used by people who are disabled, in particular people who are blind. And the only equipment that can be used for someone who's blind to vote by themselves without assistance is electronic voting equipment. But there's not a single instance of anyone showing that an election in the United States can compromise through the software used in an electronic voting machine.
Which, of course, doesn't mean it won't happen. But let's.
It's been 40 years.
Yes. So let's go to your central thesis. So we sort of addressed this. I think the issues that you talk about Florida, those were systemic issues. But let's go to your central thesis.
Actually, if I just might intervene, Florida has several individual vote problems. One, some people who were not felons ineligible to vote were barred from voting. A much larger group of people, of felons who were ineligible to vote in Florida, were allowed to vote. That's from the Palm Beach Post and from the Miami Herald voter investigations. So those were illegal votes for people blocked from voting. Both of those are wrong. Secondly, you had a case up in Jacksonville where a bunch of people were told to vote every page by one candidate. It turned out if you voted every page, you invalidated your vote. Then, of course, you had the butterfly ballot. So there were some systemic issues, but there were also fraud issues. Remember, 537 votes decided who was going to be president of the United States. We have proven that several thousand people who were felons,
right,
who were ineligible to vote, nonetheless voted in that election.
Right.
That is called fraud. So there were systemic and individual problems in Florida.
We're not going to relitigate Florida.
But it would vote.
The two parties would argue about what the difference in the vote was.
This was the Palm Beach Post and the Miami Herald, which were distinguished newspapers that have won Pulitzer Prizes for their voter fraud coverage.
Okay, well, felons, you talk about felons. And this seems to be a concern of yours, felons voting. So couldn't that be eliminated by just secretaries of state, individual voting authorities checking some sort of a database? Couldn't that be handled fairly easily?
Well, not at the Justice Department and the Department of Homeland Security involved, and I think Hans can explain that.
A lot of states would like to verify that people are felons by checking correctional records, and the Justice Department keeps suing them to stop them from doing that. I mean, look, just recently we had a lawsuit filed by the Obama administration against Florida trying to prevent them from checking the citizenship status of individuals who'd registered. Now, why were they checking that? And why was Florida checking that? Because these are individuals who, when they went to get a driver's license, had told the DMV they were not U.S. citizens. Florida found out that they had also registered to vote. They wanted to check the federal databases. They wanted to check DHS records. And what happens? The Justice Department sues them, trying to stop them from verifying these people are U.S. citizens. Why would they do that? Why would they want people who are not U.S. citizens voting? And Florida has already found, just with a preliminary check, I mean, they've already found 100 people who are confirmed, not U.S. citizens, who are registered to vote, 50 of whom have voted in prior elections. And that's just at the very start of this program. And, you know, 50 voters, that's 10% of what made the difference in the 2000 election.
Again, there obviously the two parties don't agree on what made the difference in the 2000 election. So anyway, let's get to your central thesis about preventing voter and election fraud and making sure only U.S. citizens vote. That seems pretty commonsensical, and that shouldn't be a partisan issue. And yet, this is a pitched partisan battle. I think it's very fair to point out, come from a conservative Republican perspective, and the book is very much from that perspective. Do you think you've cherry-picked examples of voter fraud perpetrated by Democrats?
No, because there are many examples of Republican voter fraud. They're listed in there. Cases in Kentucky, cases in Maryland, and various other cases. They're in the book.
You glance and mention them. Well, you would give a whole chapter to black voter fraud in the South.
Well, no. It's voter fraud perpetrated by both election officials and mostly corrupt machines that are, frankly, harming minority voters. You know, Arthur Davis, the Democratic congressman from Alabama until 2011, finally said the truth, which is, the real voter suppression in this country, the real victims of voter fraud in this country, are minority voters in areas that are controlled by political machines, either urban or rural, and they want to clean up or change their government, and they can't do it because their elections are stolen out from under them. With Greene County, Alabama, which is mentioned there, the victims of that horrible machine that stole the votes in Greene County, Alabama, were minorities. Detroit, Tommy Kilpatrick was a corrupt mayor of Detroit. He won re-election probably based on absentee ballot fraud. We know there was a lot of fraud because the city clerk of Detroit was removed from her position after that election. Kwame Kilpatrick was only caught because FBI wiretaps finally proved that he was a crook. He spent time in federal prison. The victims of that voter fraud that were perpetuated in Detroit were the minority citizens of Detroit.
Okay, so voting is a right, not a privilege. I think you would both agree to that. But it's a right, not a privilege. And I don't think it can be compared to getting on an airplane. I mean, it's a fundamental right and responsibility in a democratic society.
It comes with responsibilities, though.
Yes.
Rights come with responsibilities.
But free and fair access to the polls, I would think, should not be subject to costly restrictions. And I just wonder, is there a Republican feeling that increasing registration hurdles or tightening up and requiring stricter voter ID automatically benefits Republicans in the same way that increasing registration automatically benefits Democrats?
Yeah, but the problem, your underlying assumptions are just wrong. Voter ID has been shown it does not restrict people. It does not prevent them from voting. Now, how do we know that's true? Well, unlike all these guesstimates and speculation done by opponents to it, we've seen the results in Georgia and Indiana. They have the toughest photo ID laws in the country. Their laws have been in place now since 2006. They've had two federal elections. They've had numerous local elections. The turnout of minority voters and the turnout of Democratic voters has not gone down. It's gone up. Indiana, their voter ID law was in place for the first time in the 2008 election. That's the law that the U.S. Supreme Court upheld, said it was the toughest photo ID law in the country. Barack Obama won.
First time a Democrat won since 1964.
Yeah.
And the minority turnout increased in 2010,
that's right,
even though Barack Obama wasn't on the ballot.
Why is it then that only, except for Rhode Island, which of course you mentioned, it is only Republican governors and state legislatures that have initiated these voter ID laws.
Well, first of all, in Kansas, the majority of the Democratic state legislators in the state voted for that state's
voter
ID law.
But it's still a Republican-controlled. Why is
No, but the majority of Democrats in the state legislature voted for it,
yes.
And there has been Democratic support, albeit spotty, in other states. This has been a partisan issue. What Artur Davis, the former Democratic congressman from Alabama, says, this is unfortunately because
coming up next.
Republican governors and state legislatures that have initiated these voter ID laws.
Well, first of all, in Kansas, the majority of the Democratic state legislators in the state voted for that state's
voter
ID law.
But it's still a Republican-controlled. Why is
No, but the majority of Democrats in the state legislature voted for it.
Yes.
And there has been Democratic support, be it spotty, in other states. This has been a partisan issue. What Artur Davis, the former Democratic congressman from Alabama, says, this has unfortunately become hostage to a political agenda. The political agenda that's driven by, I think, partisans who do not reflect their constituencies. Look, we have polls going back 20 years on voter ID. Majorities, clear, convincing majorities of Hispanics, African Americans, liberals, Democrats, any group you want to call, support photo ID at the polls. Name me a demographic group that doesn't support it in any national poll. I can't find it. So the bottom line is there is a problem here between the people who pretend to speak for constituencies and the actual constituencies, because in every single poll, a majority of those groups support photo ID at the polls. They are in conflict with their self-appointed leadership.
Well, let's talk about the realities of getting a photo ID. People, you know, if you already have a driver's license, which if you grew up in the suburbs, you've probably had since you were 16, you may not understand what the big deal is. You have a driver's license.
Or state-issued ID if you're a non-driver.
But it's estimated that more than 10% of eligible voters do not have a government-issued photo ID. A number of
people. No,
no,
only one. Go ahead, Ron.
That all comes from the Brennan Center. Okay, the Brennan Center is an ultra-liberal organization that is involved in litigation. They are litigating against photo ID, and you don't usually take the numbers of an organization that's litigating to be correct. I've written several studies that have shown why those numbers are incorrect. In fact, most of the studies from, for example, American University did a study of three states, including Maryland, Indiana, I think Florida. They found that one-half of 1% of registered voters don't have an ID. We know this is not a problem. Again, we go back to Georgia, a state that's had photo ID law in place for years. They provide a free ID to anyone who doesn't have one. The average number of individuals going to the state to get an ID because they say, I don't already have one for voting, has averaged less than five one-hundredths of 1% every year. The number of people, you cannot function in today's society without an ID. You want to apply for welfare if you're poor? You're going to have ID to be able to do that.
But you say it's free, and you say that to obtain a voter ID, it's free, but if you don't already, again, have a driver's license, it costs money to get the approved identification you need. If you need a copy of your birth certificate, it's cumbersome, and it costs anywhere from $8 to $20. So it does cost money to get the documents you need.
But the point is, almost no one is without such ID. In a court, a district court in Indiana, which heard the original photo ID case, the judge concluded that the number of people who lacked this ID was less than one-half of 1%. Now, Pennsylvania, for example, which is a state that the Obama administration is fighting over.
We have a court case.
Well, here's the bottom line. In Pennsylvania, anyone who shows up at the polls without an ID is allowed to vote a provisional ballot. That provisional ballot is set aside, and you can prove your identity later. Now, if you don't have an ID and you claim you can't pay for the supporting documents, you know what Pennsylvania says? Your vote will be counted anyway as long as you sign an affidavit saying, I am who I say I am. So even if you don't even have one penny to your name, your vote will be counted. What's the objection?
Well, why then, let's talk about
the objection.
Well, I'm going to get to that. Let's talk about it a little bit. Pennsylvania, I think, is an interesting test case. Obviously, you have the comment, this goes to the partisanship of it. You had the comment from the Speaker of the House.
That's not true.
What he said.
He's not the Speaker.
A legislator in the Pennsylvania House said because voter ID had passed that meant Mitt Romney could win Pennsylvania. So obviously, maybe you disavow his remarks, but he said it. Obviously, some Republicans feel that way.
Well, Philadelphia does have a problem with voter registration. For many years, Philadelphia has had more registered voters on its books than our citizens over the age of 18. We call that a clue that the voter registration rolls have problems, deadwood, people who shouldn't be on them. This is not just Philadelphia. It's Pittsburgh. It's a whole range of cities and counties. In Missouri, there were over 40 counties that had more registered voters than there were adults over the age of 18, according to the census. These rolls should be pruned. But there are current federal laws that make it very difficult to prevent that. What the states are trying to do, using the limited freedom that they have, is they are trying to make the voter registration rolls more accurate. Now, there are all kinds of procedures by which they have to go through. They have to be very careful how they do it. You have to skip and not have voted in several elections, et cetera, et cetera. It is certainly true that Philadelphia, and I've heard this from former Democratic city councilman Jim Tyone, a former Democratic official in the city, there has been massive voter fraud by the Democratic machine in Philadelphia. By the way, there was voter fraud by a Republican machine in Philadelphia when the Republicans controlled Philadelphia until the 1950s. The bottom line is Democratic officials have told me there is voter fraud in that city. So the legislator's comment may be accurate, but it doesn't go to whether or not voter ID is good policy or not. It is certainly true that in Philadelphia there is Democratic voter fraud because there's a Democratic machine doing it that could have partisan implications, but it does not argue whether or not there should be voter ID laws.
Well, then why?
The majority of Democrats in Pennsylvania support ID laws.
The current governor of Pennsylvania, who was attorney general for 8 years, why did he not prosecute a single case of voter fraud?
Oh, he did prosecute them. What you're talking about is voter impersonation cases. There's lots of voter fraud. The worst voter fraud is absentee ballot fraud. And most of these voter ID laws also include provisions that crack down absentee ballot fraud. For example, Kansas has a very good law. It says you can cast an absentee ballot, but you must include the last 4 or 5 digits of your Social Security number or your driver's license. That cuts down fraud dramatically among absentee voting. As for impersonation fraud, well, first of all, it's extremely difficult to detect unless someone confesses to it. To give you an example, in Washington, D.C., a 22-year-old kid with a scraggly beard and earrings walked in to the polling place of Eric Holder, the Attorney General of the United States.
Yeah.
Now, Eric Holder has lived in that precinct for 30 years. It's not as if he's not well-known in that neighborhood. And the person asked, do you have an Eric Holder at such and such an address on your voter registration rolls? He didn't even ask for the ballot. He just said, do you have such and such a person? He was immediately handed the ballot. Now, he never voted it because that would have been a crime. But if it's that easy to show up and impersonate someone, and Washington, D.C. has no photo ID law, how easy would it be for someone to vote at the end of the day for someone not as famous as Eric Holder and never be caught? It would be extremely easy and we would never know it.
Well, yes. But, of course, he didn't vote.
Well, he couldn't because it was a crime.
Right.
So, of course, he didn't vote.
Right.
But he could have, and he would have if he'd wanted to.
So why did Pennsylvania just admit in court filings in this battle that's going on, there have been no investigations or prosecutions of in-person voter fraud?
Well, how are you going to detect it without photo ID? You're missing a very basic point
here.
So
if you can't detect it, how can you prove it's so rampant?
No one's saying it's rampant, but we have specific cases that have occurred of impersonation fraud. But you're also making another fundamental error. The fundamental error you're making is thinking that photo ID will only prevent impersonation fraud. That's something I keep hearing at the Brennan Center and opponents saying that's not true. It will also prevent people from registering under fraudulent and fictitious voter registrations. Do we know that's happened in Pennsylvania? Yes, we do, because, in fact, the U.S. Department of Justice prosecuted a very big case there in the, I think, 1990s involving individuals who were putting in false voter registrations claiming that they lived in a particular district in Philadelphia for a state legislative district and then going and voting. If they've had to show a
federal
photo
judge,
ID.
A federal judge had to throw that case, had to throw that election out, and there had to be a new vote.
Right.
You know, did the name Al Schmidt, an election city commissioner in Philadelphia, which is an elected position, show up in your research? He has just issued a report several weeks ago documenting 10 separate cases a recent voter fraud in Philadelphia. And it's an extensive document. It's almost got no media attention. Did that show up in your research?
Well,
apparently not, because that's an investigation that just came out.
You question the 10% figure. You say that's a phony.
No, I don't question it. It is complete poppycock, because judges have looked at this. When judges require evidence, judges have looked at this and concluded the incidence of people who lack voter ID is extremely low. In South Carolina, the state went so far as to say, if you lack a free ID and you lack the means to go to an office and get your free ID, we will provide you a ride. Since the law was implemented in South Carolina for free voter ID, and it's free, 23 people have availed themselves of that privilege.
But why then did the Pennsylvania Transportation Department say that almost 10% of registered voters don't have the proper ID?
Coming up next on Book TV, afterward.
To pull all of that in, like Texas did, Texas is a big fight with DOJ. I mean, Texas came to the conclusion that out of the, 13 million registered voters in the state, only about 1% of the registered voters don't have some form of other ID. And for them, it's going to be very easy to get an ID.
I'm glad you mentioned Texas, because didn't Texas originally say that you could vote with a weapons permit but not with a college ID or a state employment ID?
But there's a good reason for that. Texas, you may recall during the debate, during the Republican debates on who was going to be the nominee of the party, remember, the governor of Texas was given a hard time over the fact that Texas is one of the few states where if you are in the United States illegally, not only can you attend college there, but the state gives you in-state tuition. That is why Texas is one of the few states that doesn't allow a student ID, because if you have a student ID, it doesn't mean you're a citizen. It doesn't mean you're a citizen. It's an easy ticket if you're in the U.S. illegally to go and vote. If you're going to get a
employment ID, presumably the state is checking to make sure its employees are citizens.
No, it's not a requirement necessarily that you have to be a citizen to have state employment. It's not an automatic requirement.
It's a requirement for any employer to check if you're a citizen.
No. Lots of people are on work permits. I mean, lots of people work in this country that aren't citizens. Let's put this whole voter ID thing to rest. There are groups that are spending millions of dollars fighting these lawsuits, Pennsylvania, Texas, Georgia. Now, Andrew Young, former mayor of Atlanta, former confidant of Martin Luther King, I interviewed him. He said, I don't understand what this issue is. He said, you have to have an ID to function in this society. You have to. If there are a few people who don't, what he told me was this. We are doing them a favor by giving them an ID. That is why in all of these laws, the ID is free. And there's also opt-outs like in Pennsylvania, even if you don't have the ID, you sign an affidavit, your vote will be counted. Why don't these groups that spend millions of dollars fighting this litigation, high expensive lawyers, if they devoted even a portion of that money that they're using to fight these laws to go out and help people get free IDs, they could solve this problem? Because they don't do that. They're making a couple of modest efforts, but they are spending far more with lawyers than with going out and helping people get a free ID. A free ID, as Andrew Young, the former mayor of Atlanta, told me, it puts you in the mainstream of society. You can't cash a check unless you have an ID. You can't really travel unless you have an ID. You can't rent from a library unless you have an ID. You can't do anything in life. You can't enter a federal building to complain about this issue unless you have an ID. You can't go into Eric Holder's Justice Department without an ID. In fact, to show you how bad it is, the NAACP recently had Eric Holder show up at their convention to say that having a voter ID law is the equivalent of a poll tax. Did you know what you needed to show to get into that NAACP convention to hear Eric Holder say that? You needed a photo ID. The NAACP required a photo ID to enter their own convention to have Eric Holder attack photo IDs.
And when the NAACP, they actually sued Georgia 5 years ago when Georgia passed its photo ID law. They were plaintiff in the case. And one of the reasons the cases were dismissed was because the judge noted the fact that the plaintiffs couldn't come up with a single witness. Not one person in Georgia could be unable to vote because of the ID. And that included the NAACP. The NAACP couldn't find a single one of its members in the state of Georgia who didn't already have a photo ID that would qualify under the law.
So why can't we do those things simultaneously? And I think this gets to why this is a pitched partisan issue and why people are spending millions of dollars to fight it. Why can't we have a secure voting system in which only eligible citizens are voting and increase registration and access?
Well, Chris Dodd, the former Democratic senator from Connecticut, who was the co-author of the Help America Vote Act, which was the only bipartisan piece of legislation to pass after the Florida debacle, he said the goal of our laws must be to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. We're America. We can do both. I believe that this has become a partisan issue. It's unfortunate because the vast majority of Americans agree on common sense. They want voter registration to be easy. And by the way, we make it very easy. It's a postcard. You don't even have to show up anywhere. You just send in a postcard. And we need to have some voter integrity laws to make sure the voter registration rolls are accurate and that it's not too easy for people to cheat. We can do both. What the voter ID law in all of these states is, in Georgia, for example, they have mobile vans that go around to places that are senior citizen centers, that are places where there are people who are institutionalized, and they sign up people for free ID. South Carolina, as I mentioned, offered a free ride to people to get their ID. So in almost all cases, these state laws come with outreach provisions. And I scan, we are doing people a favor by giving them an ID. Rather than arguing about who doesn't have an ID, we should be arguing about the few people who don't and make sure they get one. Indiana, the ACLU sued in Indiana to overturn the photo ID law. Their top plaintiff, their top witness, their example as to someone who couldn't get an ID was a woman who said, well, you know, I just don't have this documentation. It turned out the reason she didn't have the documentation is she lived over half the year every year in Florida. In fact, she took a property tax exemption in Florida to lower her property taxes. So actually, she was a resident of Florida. That's who the ACLU was able to come up with as their top example of someone who couldn't get an ID. And that was turned out to be completely fallacious.
That she was registered in both states.
And she was registered in both states.
Okay. Well, you have a chapter called The Myth of the Disenfranchised Voter, which is what you guys have been talking about here. But in fact, the one thing that I do know a lot about, because I've written a book about independent voters who are disenfranchised in half the states, and it's a different issue, but in half
the
states.
Well, that's a two-party monopoly problem.
Yeah,
that's not a voter.
Yeah, that in half the states in the country, they can't participate in primaries. But I do know how fed up they are with dysfunction and partisanship.
And they should be.
And I think anything that makes it slightly harder to vote, they will throw up their hands and say it's not worth
but
it.
But every poll shows that 75% of people who declare themselves independent support these laws.
They do support them in a higher percentage, certainly, than Democrats, that's for sure.
Well, 75% is called the majority.
Yeah.
So where are they throwing up their arms in outrage? Where are the examples of them doing this? So
well,
these laws.
I'm not saying outrage.
Well,
you did say
outrage.
I'm saying they're outraged at the partisanship and dysfunction.
But they're not outraged at these laws because 75% of them support them.
But if they don't have the documentation, having interviewed so many of them, they're not that thrilled about voting this fall.
Do you know anyone who does not have any kind of identification? Do you know anyone?
Well, I don't know that I would be characteristic, would I?
Seriously, it is less than one half of 1% when it comes to court and when judges rule on this issue.
Why are your numbers and the Brennan Center's numbers so different?
Tell them how the Brennan Center numbers.
Because the Brennan Center simply did a telephone poll. In 2006, of less than 1,000 people, not of registered voters, not of eligible voters, they just did a telephone poll, and then they used that.
Oh, but here's the question they asked. Do you right now, immediately, have ready address to a form of identification that you can get right now? That was the question they actually posed. It didn't say, do you have identification? It said, do you have ready access immediately to the form of identification that would be required to vote? That's what the question was.
Yeah, I mean,
that's not a real question. That's not what a professional pollster would ask.
Yeah, look, it was clearly a biased poll. It was done because
these are
they wanted.
Who are litigants in these
yeah,
cases.
They wanted to get
would you trust the poll from someone suing you? Of course not, because they have a reason to tilt the poll.
Right. But then you look at the actual turnout of elections. You look at the number of IDs issued to people who don't actually have one in states whose voter ID laws have now been in place. You look at real surveys like the one done by American University And you find that the number of people don't have ID is just tiny. Look, Kansas, their photo ID law has been in place since January. They've got 1.7 million voters. As of May, exactly 32 people, the entire state, had applied to get a free ID because they didn't already have one.
Linda, I've spoken before many audiences composed of the majority of minorities. I have told them about the Marin Center poll. By the way, the poll says not just 10% of the general population doesn't have an ID, but it's 25% of African Americans. I have thrown that number out to audiences composed primarily of minorities, and they just laugh. Is there anyone in this country, who can plausibly say that 25% of African Americans don't have an ID? That is so preposterous as to be pathetic. In fact, it's patronizing because it basically implies that they're not part of the mainstream of American life. Of course they are. They have an ID, they know how to get one, and they've had it for a long time. And if, for those few people, quoting Andrew Young, the former mayor of Atlanta, we are doing them a favor by going out and making it easier for them to get one.
Well, if, as you're saying, virtually everyone has an eligible ID and it's not a big issue, then why would the Democratic Party keep fighting it so hard? Because they want to perpetuate voter fraud? Is that the only, I mean, it doesn't make sense, does it? If, in fact, all of these people do have legitimate IDs and it's not a problem.
Okay, I think that's a pretty good place to stop. I mean, how would you sum that up? I would make two. First of all, I think Lillian or Linda Killian was just about knocked out on the canvas. She spoke to Von Spakovsky and John Fund, but you know, the evidence is there. This isn't the issue that people make it. And one of the things is screaming about it, how it's unfair and discriminatory, et cetera, et cetera. The evidence is just not there to support that. But secondly, the people that are doing the screaming about it, the politicians, it keeps them in the news, in the media, on the TV, on radio, I mean, on and on and on. But I hope this was inspiring enough, particularly this time of year, for you to go to get John Fund and Hans von Spakovsky, it's Spakovsky's book, Who's Counting? How Fraudsters and Bureaucrats Put Your Vote at Risk. I'm going to get that book myself, but you can listen to the remaining just about 20 minutes on booktv.org and just do a search at booktv.org and it'll come right up. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed that this evening. It's a timely topic, and we should count our blessings when we think about living in a nation where we want free and accurate elections. Now we're going to have Vera Lynn sign us off, as she usually does, singing We'll Meet Again.
We'll meet again. Don't know where, don't know when, but I know we'll meet again some sunny day. Like you always do, till the blue skies drive the dark clouds far away. So will you please say hello to the folks that I know, tell them I won't be long. They'll be happy to know that as you saw me go, I was singing this song. We'll meet again, don't know where.